10 o'clock. Do you know where your supply chain is?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. Yes, my friends, this week we're talking about VPX, Vita standards, supply chain concerns, and a whole lot more. But before we jump into all of that business, how about a little news you may have missed? Your asteroid or mine edition. Now, have you ever considered what the inside of an asteroid looks like? So, in late 2018, NASA's OSIRIS-REx mission met up with Bennu the asteroid. And since this clandestine meeting of asteroid and NASA spacecraft, the world has learned a lot about asteroids. And this particular asteroid has been studied more than any other asteroid in the history of space exploration. So let me tell you about this meeting. They had a couple drinks, absolutely not socially distanced. Yeah, okay, not really. But during this very important first meet and greet, the NASA team noticed something quite out of the ordinary. They observed that tiny bits of material, some large and some the size of marbles or so, seemed to just pop off the asteroid, fly into space, and then, in a lot of cases, simply circle around Bennu before they fell right back down again. It's like Newton and the apple, only over and over and over and in space. So, with the assistance of those bouncing pebbles and the OSIRIS-REx's own navigational instruments and other tools, this group of astronomers, after nearly 2 years of study, were able to successfully map out the ebbs and flows of Bennu's gravity field. But how do we know what's inside, you may ask? Well, it's the study of that gravity that is key here. Andrew French, co-author of this new study, now at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, puts it like this. He says, if you can measure the gravity field with enough precision, that places hard constraints on where the mass is located, even if you can't see it directly. Huh. So, what do you think would be inside one of these space rocks? Just another pile of rocks, right? Sure, that makes sense. And it was actually what the team at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory initially thought as well. But not so fast there, partner. The results of their study, especially in terms of the measurements of Bennu's gravity field, tell a different story entirely. You remember those chunks flying into space and then coming back? Well, according to this team at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, this means that certain parts of the interior of Bennu would need to be more tightly packed than others. And then the least densely packed spots? Well, they seem to be located around its core and near the distinctive bulge at its equator. So, my friends, there's nothing in the middle. Daniel Shears, co-author of this study, puts it like this. He says, it's as if there was a void at its center, within which you could fit a couple of football fields. Why? Well, they think that this void is actually due to the asteroid's spin. Because the asteroid is spinning faster and faster over time, that material is being pushed away from the center and toward the surface of the asteroid. In other words, poor little Bennu is spinning itself into pieces. Not exactly what the OSIRIS-REx team was looking for, or me for that matter, but as Daniel Shears puts it, we were hoping to find what happened to this asteroid over time, which can give us better insight into how all of these small asteroids are changing over millions and hundreds of millions or even billions of years. Our findings exceeded our expectations. Cool, right? Even if it was void in the middle. So if you want any further information about the details of Bennu or why it's part of a group of asteroids called Rubble Pile Asteroids, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. All right, it's time to bring in our first guest for this week. Please welcome Rob Persons from Smart Embedded Computing. Rob and I are talking about the struggles of supply chain security. Let's go.
Thank you so much for joining me, Rob.
Thanks very much for having us.
Okay, so first off, what is smart embedded computing all about?
Well, we were formerly Artisan Embedded Computing, which had a long history of coming from a variety of different acquisitions of embedded companies, originally starting with Motorola Computer Group, and I would say Huracan Artisan, combining back several years ago when Emerson bought us. We became part of it, Emerson Network Power, under the Emerson Corporation. We then were spun off into, became Artisan again, and now we are now part of Smart Modular Holdings, which is actually a very large corporation specializing in memory devices and a variety of different smaller level components, but we're interested in expanding into higher level assemblies. Made some purchases of Penguin High Performance Computing Company back in 2018, and then ultimately buying Artisan in 2019 last year. And so we became Smart Embedded Computing.
Now we are talking about supply chain security today. Now you've got an interesting real life story to share about the Navy's adoption of COTS and how the big hack played into it. Tell me more about that.
We've been working with the Navy for many, many years with a variety of our products. Our most current product line, Advanced TCA, has been used very heavily in a number of tactical systems. The products that we've built as Artisan were always built out of our company-owned manufacturing facilities in China. All during that process of working with the Navy and letting them understand where this product came from during the adoption phase, they understood it and were hesitant but comfortable with it. They became comfortable with the idea of it being built in China. It became 2018 with the article from Bloomberg. There was a lot of concern in general about how secure is your supply chain. So we had a meeting with a very high-level person within the Navy to go and discuss our practices, how we actually secure our product line and our products, and ultimately had a question from him, how can you truly guarantee we can get this product in all situations, whether we potentially are in war with one of those countries where you're producing this product? And he made a good point during that time. And so we made a decision to actually move that product line back to the U.S. We repatriated it, did it in two quarters, and are now supplying it from the U.S.
All right. So how is Smart in particular addressing these varied supply chain security issues?
Well, anything that's manufactured with Smart or any of the contract manufacturers we use, we actually have very well-defined practices in place that go from design side of it with engineering to how our people that we purchase the products from guaranteeing no counterfeit parts and how we actually purchase these parts to how we actually manufacture the boards up through, you know, post when we have a change that needs to happen. We actually have a very well-defined process to go and determine what the part should be, retest it, verify it for functionality, and actually understand what its supply chain behavior looks like so we continue to make sure that the products are securely produced and delivered to our customers.
Okay, so supply chain security issues go beyond manufacturing, right? There are component and cybersecurity issues at play here.
That's becoming more important. As the Navy and other branches of the government become more concerned about intrusion into these systems, they are now seeing the need to actually expand the protection, even in the base designs of these boards. So we're actually looking at those sorts of things of trying to improve the overall security of the product, along with looking at the components themselves that are, you know, how securely can we procure those parts.
So you mentioned something about a movement to a smart facility. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So after we went through the move in 2018, the end of 2018, the beginning of 2019, when we were purchased by Smart in July, it turns out that the Smart Modular actually has facilities around the world that we can actually be part of. Right now, the product was, well, before we are in the process of moving to a Smart facility, it was at a contract manufacturer. That has some limitations. It doesn't give us so much control over how we are able to make changes to the product and how we can expedite things if we need to, those sorts of things. So we were actually very lucky in that Smart now has a manufacturing facility in California. We are in the process of, again, moving our product lines to the ones that we focus on the Navy with in the facility in California. And then the rest of the products that we were producing in China are being moved to Malaysia. So they have another manufacturing facility in Malaysia. So we still can take advantage of the low cost manufacturing there for certain products that can deal with the fact that it's built outside the U.S. And for those products that are our customers would really prefer them be built in the U.S., we have that avenue, and it's an all smart owned facilities.
Very cool. All right, Rob, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, you could have dinner tonight with one person, alive or dead. Who would it be?
I think it would have to be Einstein. I think it'd be very interesting to get some background into how he got to all his theories of relativity and all the current theories, because he really started modern physics, or the exploration into modern physics, and I think that'd be kind of cool to talk with Einstein. I think he's an easy choice, though, right? Yeah.
Well, no one has said Einstein yet, so there you go. Well, Rob, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Sure. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Next up, it's time to bring in Xavier Marchand from Interface Concept. Xavier and I are talking about the trends encouraging change in the VPX space and why Vita 66.5 will help us all a lot in our VPX backplane designs. All right, let's get started.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, so first off, for my audience who may not know, what is Interface Concept all about?
Well, Interface Concept is a small company based in Brittany, France. We've been in this business for 30 years. We design and manufacture VPX boards for switches, single board computers, and FPGA boards.
Okay, so let's talk about VPX systems in general. What trends are encouraging change in this space, do you think?
Well, we see that SOSA is having a lot of influence on the VPX systems. We see also a trend to add fiber interfaces in VPX backplanes. We see a trend to go from 10 gig to 25 gig lanes in VPX backplanes. And we also see that cybersecurity is becoming a very important topic.
So at this year's Embedded Tech Trends, you talked about connecting with Vita 66.5. So tell me, what is 66.5 all about and how is it going to help us?
So 66.5 is a new optical interconnect standard. It's a new standard developed by the Vita Standard Organization. It's in draft stage, but it offers some promising benefits. It will help with second level maintenance. It will help easily and quickly replace boards in the backplanes, reconfigure complex systems. It will also help bring higher throughput in VPX backplanes.
All right, Xavier, since you haven't been on my show before, you're going to have my standard off-the-cuff question. So you have one last meal on planet Earth. That's it. You're going to eat one last thing for the rest of your life. What would it be?
That's a tough one. I'm going to say a good loaf of bread because I'm a French guy.
That sounds delicious right now. Good answer, Xavier. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow me or us on LinkedIn as well. Also, we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super fun techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or if you just want to chat, I promise I will respond. Shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of October 23rd, 2020, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.